For the benefit of the recording, my name is Laura Norton, and this session is the St. John's Bible, Beautiful Messes with Goose Quills and Calfskin Vellum. I'm going to pass around these goose quills and some calfskin vellum that I'm going to tell you a little bit about, so you can just kind of have a sense of what they feel like. In case you haven't had occasion to handle calfskin vellum and goose quills lately.
Goose quills, yes.
Here, move your desk. That train. I'm honored to be here. I want to thank all the organizers, and thank you, Casey and Lacey and Elizabeth, for the amazing ways that your sessions have inspired me and really, really touched me, and also set up some of the conversation that we'll have about the St. John's Bible today. So just to let you know what we're going to take a look at today, something about the St. John's, who already knows something about the St. John's Bible? You've heard of it?
A little bit.
Maybe you've seen? Okay, thanks. We'll talk about the St. John's Bible, the calligrapher behind the project, images from the St. John's Bible, evidence of beautiful mess in the St. John's Bible. My beautiful mess is inspired by the St. John's Bible and other pieces and some resources. So, Elizabeth or Lacey had mentioned the Poor Clare and being Benedictine, so that triggered for me too that this St. John's Bible was commissioned by St. John's Abbey in Collegeville, Minnesota. The scribe Donald Jackson, who is the scribe to the Queen of England, he's this fantastic calligrapher, approached them in 1998 and asked what are they going to do to mark the millennium, the turn to the 21st century. And over conversation, over months and years, it was agreed that this first handwritten Bible in 500 years would be the project. Of course, the printing press was invented about 500 years ago, and since then, you know, there didn't seem to be a need to handwrite the Bible, as had been done in all throughout history. So this St. John's Bible is meant to be a Bible for the 21st century. So it incorporates images from the 21st century, fractals, Hubble Space Telescope images, DNA strands, but it also harkens back to ancient manuscripts. It's got ancient images, and it is written on calfskin vellum and using quills. The quills you have there with the feathery barbs is not, you take that stuff off. It's just kind of decorative. But these were cut by Donald Jackson's daughter and given out when I went to meet him in Tennessee last fall. And then the calfskin that you are handling are offcuts from the St. John's Bible itself. The St. John's Bible is meant to be ecumenical. So they use the New Revised Standard Version, Catholic version. So the Benedictines are obviously Catholic, but they also wanted it to be available to people of all faiths. It's multicultural. It incorporates images from people from all over the world, which you haven't really seen before in handwritten Bibles. And it's written on that really fine calfskin vellum. The original, so you've seen these books here, the original is quite large. It's the size of a calf skin. So, the size that they could cut out of a rectangle out of a calf skin. And they have very fine calf skin. There's apparently different grades of calf skin vellum. And this is the same calf skin vellum that they would use for proclamations made by the queen, that kind of thing.
How do they prepare it? That's so thin.
It's quite a process. Yeah, I haven't done it myself.
And is it pounded or dissolved chemicals?
It's made wet and it's stretched.
Stretched. Yeah. So it's one layer of calf skin.
Yeah,
it can't be layered. It's one layer. I mean, one skin. is stretched.
Each one is stretched. And I can't remember how many capstans. It's 1,100 pages, the whole Bible. So a lot of calves will, you know, their calf skin, a lot of calves' lives were given to create this this Bible. I don't know that exactly the number or that whole process, but
yeah.
But there is, I don't know if you can tell, on one side it's smooth, it's sort of the inside, and there's the sort of the fuzzy side. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a peach fuzz. Here are some of the images from the Bible where God is represented by a presence of gold. Donald Jackson, the scribe, says he's not an illustrator, so it was kind of intimidating for him to do images of human forms. So he just kind of did this amorphous form that suggests the human form, and just in gold. You'll see on the left some of the, just the text of the Bible, the entire Bible is written out. Here's some of the images. There were 21 artists involved in total. So Donald Jackson was the scribe, and he was the artistic director for the Bible. And he enlisted the help of other scribes. So the scribes were the ones who actually wrote all the words of the Bible, exactly as you would see it in the NRSV. And they all had to, you know how we all have our own unique handwriting? They all had to make their handwriting look like as if one person had written.
Oh, wow.
So they had to practice. They had to, you know, gain that proficiency and really study that. And then they worked on this for, it was over a period of about 15 years. And some scribes worked on it for several years. Some of them worked on it throughout the whole time. But there were those scribes, I think around 8 or 9 of them. And then there were illuminators. And those were the folks who did the artwork that went around. There were 3 Americans that were asked to be illuminators. We'll see a little bit of that. So you can see there's this, these 3 were done by 3 different artists. Quite different styles. Meant to be multicultural and being inclusive. Adam and Eve image, unlike what we normally would see in our Western Bibles. In ancient manuscripts, you would sometimes see this a picture of the scribe off in the border, and they did the same thing here. It's kind of a whimsical homage to the lowly scribe. Kind of cute. And here you also see an initial capital W. All of the chapters started with a decorated letter, an initial capital like that, and they were all different. So there were a lot of T's that would start the chapter. And each one was designed, you'll see a variety of them here. So this is the frontispiece for the Gospel to Matthew, the genealogy of Jesus. So you see maybe Jesus' name in the center at the top in gold. And it's shaped like what?
A menorah.
Okay, a menorah. It has a Buddhist, you see that Buddhist circle there at the bottom, and it also has Islamic inner imagery. So one thing that is kind of unusual here, and Casey alluded to it in the earlier session, is that all the names of the women are included. All of them are included here. It includes the name of Hagar, who is, of course, she's on the at the very bottom you see Abraham. I'm not sure if you can see that. Abraham's name is written in gold. Sarah is on the left, and then Hagar is on the right. And her name is written in Hebrew and Arabic. So one thing that Donald Jackson was talking about is this family tree of Jesus is filled with all kinds of scandal, with murderers, illegitimate children. And he says, this is all of us. This reflects all of us. So Donald Jackson, I heard of him when I first started doing calligraphy in the 80s, in the 80s. And so he's sort of this giant of the calligraphy world. He's a British scribe who, as I said, has done all kinds. He did the wedding invitations for Charles and Diana. He was asked to do this for Kate and William, but he was working on this project, so he wasn't able to do that. But he's sort of held in really high regard, if you can imagine, in the calligraphic world. So it was quite an opportunity for me to go to Tennessee last fall. He was coming over for a gallery opening for the St. John's Bible. So the St. John's Bible exists in calfskin vellum, the originals. You see, these books are available very inexpensively, but there's an in-between level. There's a full-size replica of the calfskin vellum, and that's called the Heritage Edition Bible. It's several thousand dollars to get those seven volumes. So this university, Carson Newman University in Tennessee, created a whole gallery space for these seven volumes that they had purchased that are bound in calfskin leather. And they are, like as I say, full size. They are beautiful display pieces. It was quite an amazing opportunity to go there. Here I am standing next to him, like, I don't know. Just kind of in awe of this man that I've heard of and whose work I have admired for decades. It was pretty amazing. They did a ribbon cutting. They have beautiful cabinets to display the Bibles. And they were made from St. John's Abbey, where from wood that was surrounding St. John's Abbey by the monks, I guess. So I think the cabinets themselves are like $11,000 each or something. It's just, this is meant to be a gallery that lasts for, you know, quite a long time.
And where is it again?
This is in Jefferson City, Tennessee.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's Carson Newman University, which I had never heard of before I heard that Donald Jackson would be there. They have this digital screen on the right here where you can go and look at the various images from the St. John's Bible and move them around and also look at video of the process of doing the Bible.
Is this a Benedictine university?
No, it's a Baptist university. Uh-huh. So again, it's meant to be ecumenical. It's meant to be open and available to everybody. This was the opening, just to give you a sense of how they really made it a special occasion to get their Heritage Edition.
Where is the original kept?
Collegeville, Minnesota.
It is in Collegeville.
Yeah, at St. John's College. And it is... all seven volumes have not yet been bound, so you can still see original pieces. We had some at the Tacoma Art Museum several years back. And if you live in the Fargo-Moorhead area, or if you're going to be visiting this next fall, there's going to be 68 of the pages are going to be on display, you know, for the 500th anniversary of Martin Luther, of the Reformation. So they really, here's this Baptist University. They have people process in with each volume. They had choirs, the music, and had Donald Jackson speaking. So here I am, really excited to be there. And part of my beautiful mess story was here I am going to see this scribe to the Queen of England, and on the airplane I take out my brush calligraphy pen. It's really easy for traveling. It's got a cartridge, and it's just easy to take notes and kind of practice. So I uncapped it in the plane, and of course the pressure encouraged the ink to come out. So it was hemorrhaging blue ink, and I was catching it so it wouldn't land on my clothing or on the airplane seat. And so I just had this blue ink. Well, you know, it's kind of horrifying. I blotted it out, went to the lavatory in the airplane and tried to scrub it off. Well, I had the biggest ink stain I've ever had in my life, thinking, okay, I'm going to meet Donald Jackson, and I look like a four-year-old who can't control it. It's not like a, you know, funky tattoo. It's clearly that I've made this mess. I don't know if I would say it's beautiful, except that it was really humbling, and I think that can be kind of a beautiful, necessary thing. So, trying to look all adult and sophisticated.
Is that what you're
doing? Yeah, my hand.
Are you like, here I am?
This took place over 3 days in Tennessee, and the last day Donald Jackson gave a workshop. So we were able to work with the calfskin vellum and the goose quills. People came from all over the country because this was a really unusual thing for him to show up for such an event. So there were people there from California and Wyoming and all over the East Coast, as well as from the whole Tennessee area. Here you can see him on the right cutting some of the quills, and he just took us through some exercises. It was really a great occasion for so many. So the St. John's Bible is a fantastic, beautiful, finished product, but it was written by human beings. So inevitably there are some messes, some of which were intentional and some of which were unintentional, and they had to deal with those things. Love is patient, love is kind. That's what you're seeing in the beautiful colors, the beautiful orderly column on the left. On the right, you're seeing, if I speak in the tongues of mortals and angels, and I do not have love, I am a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. Mm-hmm. So you can kind of see the beautiful mess of disorder. Anytime we're acting out of a place that doesn't include love. So that's a intentional mess there. The Beatitudes, this is probably one of my favorite. This piece was done by Thomas Ingmeyer, who's one of the American illuminators. He is in San Francisco and does fantastic visual letters. He, rather than being all about legibility, he's about visual impact. And he's been doing that for, I think, 30 years. I've taken workshops with him too, and he's really on the cutting edge. So he was asked to do this Bible. You can see that it's in gold. The words of the Beatitude are in gold on the left. And then on the right, you have this sort of beautiful mess, and I'll show you some close-ups.
And is that, that's not gold, it's gold?
It is gold, yes.
And how do you make gold in ink?
How do you, what, you don't make it in ink, you gild. You put a, you put some sort of gesso on, and then you lay gold foil on it, and you burnish it, and then brush away the excess. So it's quite a process.
So the color, like watercolor, I don't know what it is, but are those letters like VE? Mm-hmm. They kind of look like the letters?
With that, yeah, those are letters, right.
Okay.
Yeah. Can you see what it says?
No. No.
Blessed, isn't it? Blessed.
Yeah, blessed.
Oh, okay. Mm.
But it's not obvious, is it? It's not really readily apparent. It's a mess. Mm-hmm. I think, kind of like the poems that we were reading, that Elizabeth had us reading, some of that was blessing, but it was kind of a mess, like cow's milk coming out of a cow. I don't know. Can you imagine how blessings are sometimes, they look messy? Mm-hmm. Here is one of the places. So Catskin Vellum, one of the things that's wonderful about working on Catskin Vellum is that you could, if you make a mistake, you have a misspelling, or you write the wrong word, or you forget a word, you can just sand off the top. So it's much easier to work with in some ways than paper. So that's what they would do when they would make errors. But occasionally what happened was there would be a significant error where they had written the whole column of lettering. And maybe they came back later and realized, oh no, we're a line or two short. In that case, they really couldn't, without damaging, making it look bad, they couldn't just sand it off. Mm-hmm. So they had to come up with creative ways to deal with that. So, and it's the same thing that they did with medieval manuscripts in the olden, you know, hundreds of years ago. They didn't have the luxury of, you know, cut and paste. They just made corrections whatever the way they could. So what they've done here is they wrote, this line was omitted, so they wrote it on the very bottom and put it into a little ribbon, and they have the bird carrying that up on the string, and where the bird's beak is, this is where it should have been. So one of the artists had to go back through later. It became quite a process, but there's something sweet about that. There's something that tells the humanity of the artists. I think. Here's another instance where two lines were left out.
Oh.
They've got another bird doing its job, pointing to where it needed to be. And that's kind of appealing to me. I think that's one thing that makes art really interesting, is when there's something unexpected, you know, it kind of, it gives you a little puzzle to solve. You're reading through and you have to go down here and read the two lines and then come back up. It's just not conventional. I think there's something really sweet because it does reveal humanity and makes it maybe a little bit more interesting to look at than if everything were exactly perfect. We're used to things being perfect now because they can be with the use of computers, but absolutely human-made here. Here's one of my favorites. Two lines were omitted, and instead of a bird, they have this bee.
That's beautiful.
Who is taking this placard of two lines and has a pulley system that the bee is operating to get those two lines back up to where they need to be.
Oh, I see those way up there.
Mm-hmm. Well, the two lines are is pretty interesting.
I called on God and the spirit of wisdom came to me.
Well, another thing it does too is it highlights that verse. Okay. You know, like people, like formatters intentionally do, you know, with highlighting that by separating it out from the text. And so that's an unintentional thing that has happened because of the mistake.
Exactly. Yeah. I love it. And just look at the detail of that bead. I think the artist's name is Chris Tomlin, who did this fine nature illustrations.
So in addition to the people who were the scribes, there were also artists who contributed to the illustrations.
Exactly. And generally those were two different sets of people. The scribes concentrated on getting the text written, and then the illuminators would then be sent this calfskin vellum with all this work that's been done and a blank space. And then they had to put their artwork there. And also, you know, artwork was done on both sides of the vellum. So you could be receiving this, you know, illumination, text and illumination that had been done by Donald Jackson and these scribes, and all these hours and days that had been gone into it, and you're working on the other side. And the pressure that the artist felt, I've heard them speak about, you know, you're working, it's one thing to sort of mess up something that you're working on, but when other people have invested so much, it feels...
Did they have something underneath to make the lines straight?
They would line up the sheets, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And they had pinpricks on each side to kind of indicate where the lines were. I don't know any calligraphers who can really write straight lines without help. Mm-hmm. If I'm writing anything, I tend to write uphill. So.
How'd you do the walls downstairs?
I winged it.
You what?
Yeah. I just did it. That was more of a kind of a spontaneous thing that for the most part worked out.
It did.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
The Ten Commandments. So here in the design, you can see we have these Ten Commandments. We are supposed to live by these Ten Commandments. And toward the bottom, what's happening?
Just get all mussed up.
Then they sort of disappear.
Yeah, they're really like, this whole Ten Commandments thing isn't working out as solidly as we had hoped, you know? So
I have a question. I'm up here.
Hello.
With a piece like that before, so it was like, so it's writing and also like illumination, is that what you were calling it? So. For this piece, who was working on this? Was this like someone who was writing it out, or?
One artist. So the artists were, generally speaking, the artists were calligraphers.
Mm.
You know, so yeah, the same person did the lettering and everything. That's a really good question.
Hmm.
So just like I like to do art and calligraphy that's not just simply, you know, writing out a poem in one color, that kind of thing, it's kind of more interesting if you can bring in other elements, color, design, that kind of thing. So this is from the book Wisdom, which is in the Apocrypha. And this verse is, "For she is a breath of the power of God and a pure emanation of the glory of the Almighty. She is a reflection of eternal light, a spotless mirror of the working of God, an image of his goodness." And one commentator that I'm not really familiar with the Book of Wisdom, but you see that it's all women's faces. There's a Palestinian woman, indigenous woman, there's wrinkles, there's imperfection. This commentator says, "We can never see God directly in this life, but in wisdom we see God's reflection in the mirror, and it is a female face we see." So you see the circle around is the phases of the moon. So again, alluding to womanly cycles and that kind of thing, just really giving homage to people around the world, women in particular, in this illustration. Here is Ezekiel in the Valley of the Dry Bones. There's devastation at the bottom there. You can see the horrors to the earth. Bones from the Armenian genocide. There's a pile of eyeglasses from Auschwitz. And then he also has in there the horrors of consumer society. You see that junkyard stuff, right? You're thinking, why is there a car in this Bible? It's junkyard images. It's throwaway society. And amidst all that, and up above, the rainbow colors and gold represent the presence of God or glorification of God. And just, there's a very small little glimmer of hope there, a little bit of presence of God indicated at the bottom with that little rainbow. Can you see that? Mm-hmm. So even in the midst of all the devastation, dry bones, God is there. Esther. This image was done by Suzanne Moore, who is one of the artists, illuminators. She is actually lives on Vashon Island now in western Washington near Seattle. So Esther, queen, but also with a Jewish heritage. She had to face a time in her life where she was wrestling with who is she? And so, I don't know, I think some of us feel that way sometimes. Who am I? Am I this, what I used to be? Am I what I currently am? Am I what I'm going to be in the future? So this really illustrates. Here you can see the menorah on the right-hand side, showing her Jewish side, and then on the left, just the royalty that she's taken on. And then you see the hanging of, Casey, maybe you can help me with the name of the king's helper who was hung in this story. Haman, that's on the right, yes, right. But to me too, that's just a haunting image, and it just brings to mind images of lynchings.
Mm-hmm. Laura, were the illustrators given advance notice of what they would be doing, and did they have to submit sort of an example of what they might be putting in?
Yeah, that's a really good question. Did the illustrators have, you know, some guidance as to what they were going to do? So St. John's College, St. John's Abbey, had a committee that sent the artists some theological backgrounds, or this is sort of what we're thinking. Here are some images that you might incorporate. So they were suggestions, and then there was some conversation back and forth, some sketches that would go back and forth, and then they would get input on them. So yes, they didn't have to come up with them on their own. And a lot of the illuminators, or at least some of the illuminators, were not Christian or maybe not familiar with the Bible, so it was really helpful to have that theological guidance. And then they could work with the images, and then, yeah, just kind of a negotiation. Yeah, that's a good question. Okay, so I thought I would show a little bit about my beautiful messes inspired by the St. John's Bible and other amazing pieces. This is a statement after the Charleston church shooting, statement by presiding Bishop Elizabeth Eaton. in 2015. What a mess that, what a horror that was. And to know that it was people in Bible study, black people in South Carolina, two of whom were graduates of Lutheran seminaries, killed by a white Lutheran man, ELCA Lutheran man. So she came out with this statement, I urge all of us to spend a day in repentance and mourning. And then we need to get to work. Each of us and all of us need to examine ourselves, our church, and our communities. We need to be honest about the reality of racism within us and around us. We need to talk and we need to listen. But we also need to act. No stereotype or racial slur is justified. Speak out against inequity. Look with newly opened eyes at the many subtle and overt ways that we and our communities see people of color as being of less worth. Above all, pray for insight, for forgiveness, for courage. I think that was so devastating for our country. So to me, her words were a little bit of beauty in the midst of that terrible mess. And so my feet are in this, just so I can, this is not really the piece, this is just a photo of the piece, but this image I kind of like, is the feet show the scale of the piece, but also just the whole idea that my feet need to get busy walking and doing, just as our hands need to be busy doing the work that she calls us to. This was in November after the election, as people were just reflecting on where we are. Don Saliers, who is a United Methodist pastor, theologian at Candler Theological Seminary in Atlanta, Georgia. And it's just a way, again, when there's something that feels like a mess, if there's some way of bringing some beauty to it, this is kind of my way of trying to bring some beauty to a situation that feels like there's a lot of grief and it feels like a mess in my own heart and my own emotions. So part of this is Mary's song is still prophetic. The search for true commonweal in this deep drift in the world toward isolation, distrust, and destruction is our common vocation. And this is a mess because this was just a practice piece, and you can see I have some smudged stuff, but I was trying out different lettering and colors. But this is that Dietrich Bonhoeffer quote that is incorporated in this statement that was put out by Holden Village not long after the election. Christianity stands or falls with its revolutionary protest against violence, arbitrariness, and pride of power, and with its plea for the weak. Christians are doing too little to make these points clear rather than too much. Christendom adjusts itself far too easily to the worship of power. Christians should give more offense, shock the world far more than they are doing now. Christians should take a stronger stand in favor of the weak rather than considering first the possible right of the strong. So for me, if I feel like my life is disordered or something feels disordered about the world, it feels like a mess, the way for me to bring about some beauty is try and find some words of hope and light and then spend time with them and letter them and do them in some sort of design that can illuminate and can magnify the light that I think that those words give. That's what I feel like is my calling. Okay, this was a mess that I was working on this week to do some banners here in the village. So just kind of showing you, this is a 60 inches wide and 90 inches long a banner for Lent that will come out on March 1st on Ash Wednesday. So I'm working on this in the lower level of Chalet 2 this week, and this doesn't even begin to show the mess that I made, but I tried to bring some beauty out of that mess. And then this was kind of a late night work session where I had my wine to help me. And here's the finished piece. I'm not sure if you can read the words on the left. Let my prayer be counted as incense before you. And then going up vertically, it says, I call upon you, O Lord. And then coming down vertically, give ear to my voice when I call to you. Psalm 141. And then there are some words from Psalm 151 written across the bottom there. And hoping that that gold going up the center is reminiscent of incense. Okay, so this was the second banner that I was trying to make. I brought these five pre-dyed silk scarves. I dyed them at home so I wouldn't have to do them here and bring all the materials up here. So I had this plan to use for ordinary time, which is the green season, to do four green scarves and then one yellow one just for a little bit of contrast. So that was the plan. And here are my tools and kind of I'm laying it out here. So what happened, I did the lettering on, this was Psalm 58 that Pastor Adam helped with. Just saying that Psalm 58 or Psalm 98, anyway. I did some of the lettering on these. And then what happened was I lettered with white on this, on the yellowish orange. And I was kind of devastated to see how it turned out because it just looked crummy. The silk, the orange silk was a bit thinner. So when I was lettering on it with acrylic paint and the brush, the fabric would come with the brush rather than kind of it was acting differently than the green one. So I only had this one piece here. If I were at home, I would dye another one and re-letter it, but this is all I had. So this is my kind of mess and my panic moment. So what I did was I walked away from it and I went back the next day, because sometimes I'll do lettering and I'll think, oh, it's terrible, and then I'll come back the next day and think, oh, it was pretty good. You know? The next day I came back and it did not look any better. So,
that's like life, right?
Yes, it's just like life, absolutely. And I just said, I can't feel good about leaving that in there. This is my contrast piece, what am I gonna do? So I polled people, I asked them, like, so then I had this other scarf that I just brought along for this orange beloved. It just doesn't have anything to do with the psalm. But I thought, well, maybe I could just stick that in there and it'll just fit in. Because I felt like I needed some sort of a contrast. It wasn't meant to be a finished piece either, it was kind of a practice piece. And I thought, well, I can just stick it in here. Let the hills sing, beloved, it's not in psalm. Sing together for joy. The hills sing together for joy. I was repeating some of the phrases from Psalm 98. So I thought I could stick that in there. But Elaine and I talked about this, and we thought, you know, that's going to be the focal point, that beloved, and that's not meant to be the focal point. The other one was sort of yellow and more muted, and we said, nope, we're going to take that one out. So I was really thankful to have another opinion about what to do. So just what happened was just did the green pieces and sewed them on there, and it's green for the green season. It doesn't have as contrast, but that's just sort of how it came out, and I think I'm happy with it. I had to kind of throw out the part that I really wanted to make fit into my plan and just say, no, I've got to let it go. So that was a real honor to be able to do some banners. So this will come out, I think this will maybe be in the VC sometime this summer. Okay. Well, so I'm going to do a calligraphy session. I wanted to mention this today after lunch, and then tomorrow again. But I just wanted to mention here I am at the women's retreat. And if you're interested in calligraphy or lettering, there's this wonderful regional calligraphy conference called Letters of Joy that happens every year in the Seattle area. It's a two-day festival. They bring in people from all over the region, and they bring in people from the artist who's going to be a keynote this year is from California. He was one of the Disney artists.
share class tomorrow. You're doing two more classes on calligraphy. Are they the same or are they two different?
They're the same. This afternoon and then tomorrow morning are the same class, just two iterations of the same. What's that?
You gotta sign up.
You have to sign up. It's limited just because of the supplies, the number of supplies we have in the village. Yeah, and that is happening in Chalet too. So, and then I'll be on faculty here in June for the week. But also, I don't know how many of you are aware of the Grunewald Guild, which started out from the people who were Holden Village folks who wanted to bring together art, faith, and community. So that's over in Plain near Leavenworth. So they have week-long summer workshops that I would love to see you at. So do you have any questions about the St. John Bible? Or
I wanted to ask you a question about you.
Yes.
So I was really struck by the way you delineated the roles of the St. John Bible between the scribes, who were sort of the egoless people who had to conform, and then the illuminators who were called in to do more interpretation and expression. And on that piece that where you did the bishop's statement, it said Laura Norton scribe. Mm-hmm. So that, but I think for, I mean, there you were using the word that with a lot less ego in that. So I just wondered how you feel vis-a-vis scribe versus illuminator.
I'm just always, I just scribe the person who wrote it. I think I'm fine with that. Mm-hmm. And I don't always write that. Sometimes I just have a little signature depending on what I've done. But I did want to say one thing about Donald Jackson. He's this sort of this royal Donald Jackson. He did tell the story of doing this project, and he said that he had no idea what it was going to take. He didn't know how long it was going to take, how much money, how he was going to get it funded. And he said, I didn't know whether I was good enough to do it. Mm-hmm. And that was a real revelation to me, because here he is at the top of his profession in the world, mm-hmm. and he's doubting himself. I was so happy to hear that. Right? Professionals, do you ever doubt yourself? Yeah. I'm a fraud. I'm not really good enough to do this thing that I say that I'm trying to do. Even Donald Jackson, after his decades, he's been given these awards from the Queen and all that, he said, I'm not sure if I'm up to it. But he did it. He just jumped in and did it. And he got other people.
Was he one of the artists, or was he sort of more the project manager?
He was the primary artist. So he did some of the illuminations. He did much of the lettering, the lettering too. Oh. Yeah.
So he could do both roles. So maybe the key is both.
He did both,
set aside ego when needed and claim it at another time.
Yeah, the folks who did the text had to come and basically live in his near his workshop in Wales. So some people couldn't do it for that reason. They had other obligations with family or work, that kind of thing.
Who are all of the different artists and scribes? You said there was three Americans working on the project, so who are the other folks?
Suzanne Moore is the one who lives on Vashon Island now. She worked at American Greetings for, I think, 30 years in Cleveland. And Thomas A. Meyer is the one I mentioned before, who did Beatitudes. He is in San Francisco. And then Diane Von Arx, who is a calligrapher in the Minneapolis area. And then there's a Jewish illuminator and British ones and other European. I'm not sure how far along it is. I just know there are very few American artists. Well, thanks very much. If you want to stay and ask a question, you're welcome to. But thank you so much for your attention. And thanks for coming.